The time is 2:52 p.m. We're back on the record for the formal hearing continuation of OPAPA 16-007 and 16-011.
Doing, Mr. Agege, well, I believe your next witness is Ms. Betty Gale.
Yes, it is.
And she is at the witness stand. I ask the witness be sworn. Please stand up, Ms. Gale.
Please raise your right hand. Please state your name.
Elizabeth C. Gale.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Please be seated.
Mr. Agege, your witness or direct.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Ms. Gale.
Good afternoon.
Can you please tell us what is your current employment?
I'm a project manager and civil engineer with Setiati Architects. I've been there for 3 years.
And Setiati Architects is a local firm?
It's a local architectural firm, yes.
Okay. And also Setiati Architects, you're familiar with Guam Educational Facilities Foundation?
Yes.
Okay, and Setiati Architects is part of the team comprising the GIF team in responding to the RFP that's at issue in this?
Yes, Setiati Architects was on the team as the architectural design leader, I guess, the prime for AE services for the design team.
So can you tell us a little bit about your work experience first? How long have you been at Setiati?
I've been with Setiati Architects for 3 years. I was hired as a project manager and a civil engineer, so I run the civil engineering department, but I also manage a lot of their large projects. Before Setiati, I was the office manager for a Hawaii-based company called Belt Collins. So I was the office manager and engineer in charge of Belt Collins Guam. I was there for 15 years. And then after college, after graduating, coming back to Guam, I worked for GMP Associates. I started as a civil engineer, junior civil engineer. After getting licensed, I became a senior civil engineer with GMP and was there for 11 years.
Also, just going back to Setiati, what other members of Setiati work with you with regard to the GIF team?
Well, John Setiati would have been the architect or designer of record. Renato Martinez is an architect, and he would have also been a project architect on the project. And probably managing the architectural design team. My role would have been more, not necessarily the civil engineering design, but kind of facilitating with the government agencies, because it would have been a multidiscipline project that required interfacing with multiple government agencies, and that has kind of become my forte within Setiati. I have no problem dealing with government agencies, so that would have been my role.
And you mentioned Renato Martinez. Is his nickname Tato?
Yes.
Have you held any government positions?
No, I've never held a government position. But I have been contracted on behalf of a government entity to provide project management services, such as construction management or overall project management, where we acted as the government's agent in overseeing the construction, overseeing change orders, managing and compiling change order documentation, negotiating with the contractor, putting together the engineering justifications, etc., so that procurement process change orders. So I've never worked as an actual government employee, but I've worked on behalf of the government.
Okay. Have you held any appointed government positions?
Oh, yeah. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah. I am currently on the Guam Board of Regents. Before that,
I was the
University of Guam Board of Regents. I was on the Guam Professional Engineers, Architects, and Land Surveyors Board, the Peels Board. I was on for 8 years, and I was chairman for 2 years. For a while, about 1 year, I was on the DPR Commission, Parks and Recreation Commission.
So did you say that you were the chair of the appeals board?
Yes, I was the chair for 2 years.
Okay. And how long were you a member of the appeals board?
For 8 years.
And you said that you're a member of the UOG Board of Regents?
Correct.
Do you hold a position there on the board?
I am the current vice chair, and I chair the Physical Facilities Committee.
Are you a member of any professional societies?
Yes, I'm the treasurer of the Guam Society of Professional Engineers, which is the local chapter of the National Society of Professional Engineers. And I'm on a nonprofit board that wants to build a children's museum, but it's not been active lately.
Okay. Do you have any experience in school projects?
Yes. When I was with Belt Collins, we did some high school planning. It was with Earth Tech, and we were a consultant to Earth Tech, but we did planning for Guam DOE for kind of the new school plan. And then Belt Collins was the civil engineer for the McCool Middle School, elementary school. It was a design-build project for NAFAC Pacific, and Belt Collins was the civil engineer for the DVRFP package. When I was with GMP, they were working on a project at Anderson. There was an Anderson Middle School, and John Satiotti, who I work with now, was the architect working with GMP for the Anderson Middle School. I think it was middle elementary school.
Okay, so prior to, you mentioned a few minutes ago, you alluded to some of your experience working with, as a contractor, or doing some government
projects?
Yeah,
well, when, after Typhoon Paca, there was a lot of typhoon damage up at Anderson, and so the Army Corps of Engineers was tasked with managing the FEMA dollars that were given to Anderson to repair the projects, but the Army Corps was not able to manage or staff a full office on Guam, and so they used a contract that GMP had to basically staff the office. We did the construction inspections, and then and it was multiple contractors. And I originally wasn't on the project, but change orders started to come in pretty fast and furious. And change orders are pretty paper intensive, and you need to be able to justify, negotiate, provide cost estimates, et cetera. And so they brought me in to kind of manage the change order documentation that was required of the Army Corps.
Okay. And in your work experience, have you had any experience with government procurement?
We've responded to government projects, or I guess procurement, and so my experience is successfully packaging the responses to RFPs and being interviewed for various projects and actually being awarded government projects.
Okay. So with respect to that experience, let's break it down a little bit. So have you, in your work experience, have you been involved in projects with the government in design build or design bid build projects?
We've been involved at all levels.
Okay.
Sometimes the government will put out an RFP for AE services for a specific project, say a water system or a wastewater system. And the RFP, so engineers will respond to the RFP. The best team is selected. We negotiate and then we work on the design. So the design is done by the AE firm for the government. And then when the project is, the design is completed, it goes out for bid for contractors to then bid on the document or the bid package. And during construction, many times we are still involved during construction. We're not necessarily doing construction management, but we're making sure that the project is being, we're reviewing submittals and making sure that the project is being constructed as designed, or if an issue comes up during construction, we have to respond to those. We have to determine if a change order is required or a change in design is required.
So. Okay.
I've also been involved in the preparing the DBRFP package. So,
and what is that?
That's a design build request for proposal package. So we usually are contracted by the government to prepare a design packet, but it's not full design. It's usually what they call 30% design or conceptual design. But it includes drawings, program documents, what they call DBRFP specifications. It's not full like uniform specifications. It's a program type specifications. And but there are sometimes performance specifications and prescriptive specifications, but we prepare all of that. It's usually even more voluminous than an actual design package, which just has contract drawings and specifications. But we prepare that on behalf of the government. We have, those are iterative designs. We do a 60, you know, we do first an FACD, a functional analysis and concept development to come up with the concept, the plan that all the stakeholders agree to. We do a 60% submittal. Everybody reviews it, determines, provides review comments. Then we do a pre-final and then a final. And then the final is then put out on the street for contractors to bid on, but the contractors will have on their team an AE firm, because that AE team will be the designer of record. So the drawings and the specs that we prepare are not considered signed drawings.
Oh, so then that process that you're talking about, the government issues an RFP to retain an A&E firm to
for a contractor with an AE on his team.
No, the first, I'm talking
oh,
going
the
back
to the
first stage.
Yeah, the first one is only the AE team, and they're fully designed, fully signed drawings and specifications.
Okay, and then that's a contract that the government pays you for to actually prepare.
Right, and that's what we call in the industry design bid build. So we do the design portion, and then it's bid, and then it's built. Whereas a design build is we prepare the specs and drawings and program, and a contractor then puts together his bid with his AE team. So his AE team has to be qualified. That's part of kind of the RFP portion of it. But he's also looking at all these drawings with 30% design and the program specifications, and that program specification includes everything from room materials, telecom requirements, electrical requirements, mechanical requirements, furniture, special civil requirements, and those are all, and then the contractor is bidding on very substantial documentation to provide a bid.
Okay, so these specifications, the package that you prepare is a pretty detailed package?
Well, it's not detailed, but it's very voluminous. It gives a lot of information so that during construction or during when they do final design, they always say, look, this RFP told us that the rooms have to have concrete walls and ceramic tile and paint finish even the furniture and the type of mechanical equipment, the type of electrical conduits, everything is all kind of spelled out in a program document that's part of the DBRFP.
So is it necessary to get into that level of detail so that the contractors who actually bid on that package are able to present a meaningful bid on that?
It is necessary because it prevents contractors from coming back later and saying that wasn't in the drawing or that wasn't in the DBRFP, so we didn't include it. So it's specific enough for them to be able to to provide a detailed cost estimate, and then everybody, all the contractors, are bidding on the same thing. They all know exactly what the requirements are, and they're all bidding on it.
And so in this realm of your experience, this has been with this been with the federal government or the government of Guam?
That process, my most experience with that process has been with the federal government.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so in your experience, the federal government has a pretty packed down method of how it does its procurement?
Yes, in fact, there's a website called Construction Criteria Base DBRFP, like templates, and as the engineering firm, you're supposed to download those templates, use the latest ones, and then you edit those templates to be specific to what the requirements are of the project. So there's up to like 30 sections of the templates, and they vary from foundation design, exterior enclosure, stairs, windows, doors, mechanical, HVAC, electrical, telecom, site planning, site preparation. They're very specific. There's a section for each one, and they all get edited by our design team, so that the design or the engineer or the contractor who's selected knows exactly what the program was.
And so, Ms. Gale, you know the difference between an RFP and an IFP, correct?
Correct. Yes, I do.
Okay. Based on your knowledge, what's the difference? Please explain to us your understanding.
Well, an RFP is a request for proposal. It's a qualifications-based selection. There must be evaluation criteria that are spelled out, the points are spelled out. There's usually no bid associated with an RFP, but the evaluation must be spelled out as part of the RFP package, or the RFP request, I guess. And then as a member of the appeals board, and as an engineer, we do subscribe to the qualifications-based selection, which is basically a mini version of the Brooks Act, which is the federal government's solicitation for professional services is using the RFP, which is the qualifications-based selection.
Okay.
And then an IFB, from my understanding, is an invitation for bid, and it is where a bid is solicited for materials or construction or service. I don't know if you can do services with IFB on Guam. I don't think you can. It's usually
janitorial and landscape.
Yeah. Okay. Those are the only services that you can do an IFB on.
Not professional.
So the difference is that an RFP usually doesn't require you to provide a bid, and an IFB does require a bid with cost.
Okay. So you're familiar with the procurement at issue in this case. It's a request for proposals. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. What is your understanding of what the bid was for? I mean, the request for proposals, what it was for?
It was a request for proposal to first rebuild the Simon Sanchez High School. That would have been kind of, I guess, the seed project. It would have been the team that would have had to respond. They were going to be evaluated based on certain evaluation criteria. And the contract would have been to build, like I said, the seed project would have been to build the Simon Sanchez High School. And then there were 34, 35 other schools who would have had maintenance and other type of projects that would have been issued on a task order basis to that contractor.
And you were involved in also the meetings regarding the negotiations that occurred with Mr. Sean Easter?
Negotiations, no. We were informed as they were occurring, but we weren't included in the negotiations.
Okay, and you were involved in... working with Mr. Easter on the refining of the, for example, the requirements of Simon Sanchez High School in conjunction with the Department of Education, correct?
Well, we were given kind of updates of what the refinements were, and because we had submitted proposals to Sean's company, part of it was to make sure that any fee proposal that we had already submitted was still valid, and so we were given the updates on the program as it was being refined.
Do you recall in the request for proposals package, there's a portion of it called Exhibit A, Simon Sanchez High School Considerations, and maybe I'll just direct you to the white binder there, and it's Exhibit Number 2. On page 16.
Well, there was an Exhibit A given as part of the original RFP.
Okay,
and
let's look at that.
Was...
That's Exhibit A, I mean, Cortec Exhibit 1, page, I think it's 45.
Yeah. Right, and then as in Addendum 6, there were additional information.
Okay, so if you look at page 45, that was part of the initial request for proposals,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, and then it says Simon Sanchez High School requirements.
Correct.
On that first, on the first RFP.
Right.
Okay, and then it also has a note to the bottom of that. It says all given figures. Drawings are for general guidelines. On that same page there, you see there was a note. Yeah.
Yeah. All given figures, drawings are for general guidelines and for reference only.
Okay.
And shall be verified by the offeror to comply with the standards set forth by all agencies having jurisdiction.
Okay. And then, as you mentioned, that portion of the RFP was amended subsequently.
Right.
That's Exhibit 2 on page 16. Does that look familiar to you?
And here it's changed to considerations at the time.
Okay, so what was your understanding about what was contained in Exhibit A?
Our understanding is that this looks like a wish list or a kind of a laundry list of what should be included in the high school.
Okay,
but there's so many, it raises more questions than it answers.
Okay, well, explain that.
Well, just as somebody who looks at the civil engineering portion, for instance, under grounds consideration, it says red palm trees, gardenia, trees that provide an excellent canopy.
Can you tell us what page are you referring
to?
I'm
on page 22.
Okay.
So it says red palm trees. Well, what palm tree is red except the lipstick palm tree? That's actually not a native tree. It doesn't tell you how many trees should be planted. Even native plants, so these seem to be more like these are ideas somebody has, but it's not specific. And then as you go further down, it says consider classroom, like consider patterns on the walls or floors that students can decipher. I have no idea what that means. Consider having classroom ceiling being 10 feet high and can be used as a teaching tool. Understand what the 10 feet high means. I don't know what it means by as it can be used as a teaching tool. Consider a periodic table on the ceiling of a chemistry lab. Consider footprints and fossils of amphibians and animals in the courtyard. These are all kind of wish lists, and they're not specific to be able to price.
Okay, and this is, are these anything like the design bid, the design packet, bid packages that you've been retained to perform
No, this type of specification, no. Like I said, when we do DBRFPs, it's a six-part document, and we usually prepare all of part three. Part three includes the program. So part three, chapter one, is a project description. Chapter two is project, I think it's constraints. Chapter three is project program. Chapter four is the space requirements. So the architects have determined the sizes, the relationships of all buildings and all rooms. Then chapter five is the room requirements.
Just regarding the size and specifications there, did you notice in Exhibit A that there was any guidance as to size of classrooms or any square footage?
No. I mean, I saw numbers. It said English, a regular classroom, and then even in the classroom, classroom's large enough to fit 28 to 30 students, but it doesn't give you sizes.
Mm-hmm.
Closet space for storage, able to be secured. Usually we size those type of things, or there's a size that's provided.
So is it fair to say then that, you know, based on your assessment here, on your professional opinion, I mean, these items that are contained in Exhibit A were just like what you explained, a wish list of things?
That's what it seemed to be. And then even as...
Objection, just for a moment, excuse me. So I just want to confirm, she's giving her opinion as an architect or as a civil engineer? Because I think that makes a difference. So can we get a clarification on that?
Well, based on, she's been a project manager at SETI Adi Architects, so it's based on her professional experience.
Okay, but at the same time, she's, correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Gale, but do you have any degrees or experience in architecture, generally speaking?
No, I'm not an architect, but...
No, but you're a civil engineer.
I'm a civil engineer, and I manage projects that include architecture, so...
Okay, hang on. So,
as part of
I have to rule on this motion. So, I'm going to sustain the motion in part, and still coming out of my 2 o'clock here. Let me get out of divorce line. Mr. Agagy, I'm going to sustain the objection in part, but you can elicit, because I do believe that this witness does have sufficient background in civil engineering to give her opinion. Likewise, your opinion on based on her experience as a in preparing or reviewing RFPs or IFPs.
Yes.
Okay. Let's proceed.
So in that capacity, please give your.
You have to choose one specifically. Okay.
All right. In my capacity as the project manager for DBRFP projects. In fact, I manage the projects, that's why I know what all of Part 3 includes. I ask the architects to prepare the space requirements, which include the sizes of the rooms, the space relationships of the rooms. The mechanical engineers provide the mechanical requirements in Part 5. There's a...
Okay, Ms. Gale, he's got to ask a question. Okay, you can re-ask your question, Ms. Reddy. Could you ask for an opinion? You need to specify based on which aspect of the background you're getting the opinion.
Yes, and I think she answered my question in terms of she's coming from her perspective as a project manager managing, you know, this various different professionals in her architecture.
All right, please proceed.
So in my capacity as a project manager, I am coordinating the input from architects, mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, telecom engineers, structural engineers, and architects to put together and fill in the chapter four space requirements, and then they also provide input for the chapter five room requirements. So every single room of the building that's in this DBRFP, we'll have kind of like a menu list of everything that's required from all disciplines in that room listed.
Okay. So
just
also
for clarity,
What does DBR stand for?
Design Build Request for Proposals.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Just for further clarity, in your opinion, is this RFP at issue in this appeal, DBR?
I don't think so.
You don't think it is?
I don't think it's, it doesn't look like it, it would have been a biddable, there wasn't enough information. It was an RFP, it was a request for proposal for professional services.
But you don't think it has a design build aspect to it?
No, I don't.
All right, please proceed.
Could I just follow up on that question? So, the government was asking the offerer to design the school based on this Exhibit A quote consideration. Is that what it is?
Yes, and the offerers provided their qualifications on how they would have met those requirements that were being evaluated.
So based on the exhibit that we were looking at, as you were saying, like red palm trees and all of that type of things, how much flexibility does the team or the offerer have in coming up with the design?
Well, usually, if there isn't any flexibility, if it's a true DBRFP, you are given the program, and you have to respond. You have to bid and design to that program. But
so if there
this wasn't specific enough for me to think that it is. It could be a design build. To me, it was so non-specific. In fact, the questions that came in kind of revealed that bidders had a lot of questions. Bidders couldn't understand what was in the original attachment A.
So the bidders couldn't. So that's what I'm saying. So the design was really going to be up to the offerer.
Well, there is a program that the offerer is told that these are the considerations, so expect around this many probably, but the exact numbers would have been as part of the design.
Okay, for the record, the witness was looking at Exhibit A, which is Exhibit 2, page 16. Please proceed.
So the... forgot what I was going to say.
Is there enough room for an architect and the team based on Exhibit A to design the school?
Is there enough room or enough,
enough information?
Barely or not, no, I don't think there's enough.
The reason I'm asking you this question is because earlier we heard testimony from another architect from another firm, in fact, one hired by CoreTech, saying that these were minimum requirements, that these you had to.
Then that should have been spelled out. It should have been stated that these are the minimum requirements. It's not stated there. It doesn't say minimum requirements anywhere.
It's been a while since I've. Well, that was the impression I got. That these were, you had to do these things, and that you could not deviate, let's say, like the number of classrooms, the number of, the size of the auditorium. That's what another architect
said. If there was, if one of the accompanying documents to this RFP was, and I know they had an accompanying document, and it was that inspection report from Hensel Phelps, but if they had the ideal Guam High School plan, and they said, here's what an ideal, like a school planner has said, is the ideal high school on Guam, that would have been considered the program for which a bidder can bid. That this is not considered an ideal, this two pages on the first, the original RFP, and then five pages when they responded to the addendum, that does not give you enough information to design a school. And part of Setiati's team, or part of the GIEF team, was a school planner. So the idea was that we would have been working with the school planner to refine GovGuam's requirements. We would have had a charrette, a design charrette early on, where we bring in all the... A design charrette is where all the stakeholders come together. And it's actually a French word modeled after, during Louis XIV's time, he would bring in all of the artists together, and then they would do all their drawings for whatever building, and then they would bring them to the king on a chariot, so that was called a charrette. So anyway.
Thank you for that.
So all of the architects, the users, the DPW, all stakeholders, even the utility agencies, if they're going to be providing utilities, are all invited to a charrette, and you have kind of breakout sessions. The design team might show like a first concept. What do you think of this? And then the school teachers, everybody, or the principals chime in and they say, no, that doesn't work for us. This works better for us. On Guam, we like it like this. On Guam, we don't like it like that. And so you kind of refine the program and you narrow it down. The utility agencies, DPW, all of the regulatory agencies also chime in because they give guidance as to, you know, that needs to be 8-inch water line, and we can't have anything less. We need to make sure we capture all of the runoff. This parking can't be next to that school, or, you know, various design decisions that you wouldn't necessarily have in a document like this. You would refine it. And then at the end of the charrette, everybody agrees, like, okay, this is now what the building is somewhat going to look like. You don't have the details, but you have the space allocations, you have the size of the building, you have the location, you have the parking, the egress, the ingress, and you show how all engineering and architectural systems are going to be related in the project. And then the design team goes to work and they start doing the 60% iteration. They come together, they bring it, they submit it for review. And then after review comments, then we refine it again to the pre-final and the final. So that's what we had assumed would occur on this type of project. We would have had Fanning Howey would have been the planner. They would have brought all the stakeholders together. We would have had charrettes. It might have been over one day or one week, and bring everybody together. We would refine the plan, and then Fanning Howey would, you know, kind of, because of all of their experience, we would expect that they were also kind of bringing out, it's like a facilitator, you bring out the information. People may not know how decisions are made, but you bring out how those decisions are made. And then as we got towards the final design, Fanning Howey's role would have reduced and Setiati's would have picked up. We would have said, okay, now we know what the program is, what the plan is, and we're gonna do the design drawings based on this program that has been approved. So that's what our, strategy or program was in putting together and how we assumed the whole team was gonna work together to meet this requirement.
So, I don't wanna jump the gun. Go ahead, Mr. Agadi,
okay.
Your line of question.
Okay.
Thank you for that clarification.
Okay. So, Ms. Gale, you know, referring to that same exhibit number 2, just go to page 7 of that. Okay, so in line with what your explanations were in response to the public auditor's questions, you said that there wasn't enough information in Exhibit A. The Exhibit A, items that were specified were very, very general, and you expected to be refined as the process moved along. So, you know, was your understanding of that consistent with the RFP? And I'm pointing specifically, directing your attention to section 2.0,
mm-hmm.
under the fourth paragraph there, where it says, once a firm is selected, a scope of work and fee estimate will be negotiated to perform the required services for Simon Sanchez High School?
That's exactly what I mean, is as part of an RFP, the selected firm is basically allowed to negotiate with the government. So a lot of time, especially when, even when we used to do design bid build, when we would do the design portion, when we submit our qualifications, we don't submit our fee with the qualifications. We wait until that we're selected, and then we might submit our fee. Sometimes it's too high, almost always it's too high, but we have to negotiate, and we come together with the government to negotiate an acceptable fee, and that is part of also the Brooks Act, is that you negotiate for reasonable, you know, that both the government gets a design service for a reasonable fee, and if you can't come to a negotiation, if the firm has determined that there's absolutely no way they can do that design for that amount of money, then the government is free to go to the next qualified responder.
So that was consistent with the understanding that the scope of work would be negotiated after the selection based on qualifications of the most qualified offeror.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And also, if you go to the next page on page 8, under section 4.0.
Mm-hmm.
What page again? I'm sorry.
The following page on page 8, 4.0. Okay, now here, it actually, you know, mentions the scope of work for the RFP under the first paragraph, where
mm-hmm.
it says overview. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then it says the scope of work for this RFP includes financing and lease financing for rehabilitation, construction, expansion, and renovation, inclusive of architectural and engineering design. Correct? Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Was that also consistent? I mean, it's, you know, section 2.0 says the scope of work will be negotiated. So this also, under section 4, this includes the architectural and engineering design.
Yes, and many times both contractors and owners use the final estimated cost to actually determine architectural fees. We may come up with our fees based on number of man hours, how big the project is, but they will sometimes come up with a percentage of design, percentage of cost. So usually they're around the same, but so it has to be included in the negotiation.
Okay. And are you aware that in this particular RFP, the government had asked for a cost estimate for Simon Sanchez proposers?
Yeah.
Did you find that was a little odd?
I did.
Strange? Okay.
I did.
And can you explain why?
Because RFP, you're not... Well, I guess when I was on the appeals board, there were we were constantly writing letters to government agencies reminding them that A&E services are to be selected based on qualifications. Some agencies like to have basically kill two birds with one stone and go ahead and ask for the cost estimate, but they put it in it's supposed to be in a sealed envelope and not open, and only opened once the team is selected. You're not even supposed to open the other offers unless you agree that, okay, we've selected one, now let's look at his cost and negotiate from there. So they were basically compressing time, because they usually didn't, they had some sort of a deadline on spending the money. And so that was seen by government agencies as a way of meeting appeals board, or actually GovGuam's RFP requirements, but at the same time still being able to go into negotiations right away.
Okay, so based on your view that Exhibit A contained a lot of items that were subject to different interpretations and set forth very general parameters, correct? Do you think it was difficult for any proposer to submit a meaningful cost estimate on
Objection,
this project?
Speculation. She can talk about her own experience, but she certainly can't talk about, for instance, Cortec or anyone else.
Well, I don't think she is. I think the question was just soliciting her opinion, that's all, about whether or not proposers.
Do you think it was difficult for the other proposer?
A proposer.
Yeah. So I'm going to overrule the objection. She can just give her opinion.
Yes, I do think it was difficult to make sure every item was captured without having an initial layout or at least room requirements and space requirements given in some other type of some document within the RFP.
Okay, we're going to have to cut it off here. So, Ms. Gill, I'm going to have to order that you not discuss your testimony with any of the parties or any third parties until these proceedings have concluded. You understand that?
Yes, I understand.
And I'm going to excuse you as a witness for now, but we're going to reconvene at 9:30 tomorrow morning. So I expect you back here at that time. You understand?
Okay. Yes, I understand.
Okay, thank you for coming this afternoon and waiting for the last day or so.
Thank you.
Okay, so before we reconvene, so what's the status of our studio production, Mr. Keeler?
Our staff are calling around various studios or possible studios on Guam. So far, as I understand, there hasn't been anything positive. We're following up specifically also with the gentleman, I think it was Mr. Castro, who suggested it to see if he can designate or point us in the direction of a studio that can do the work.
Shooting Stars. I've done it.
Yeah.
I've done that.
That's one possibility.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're just here in Miami, I think, by the UNESCO.
Okay.
All right.
I'm not sure if they're still there.
Well, yeah, I don't know if they're still there. Their sign is
still
there.
Is
still
the building in Miami?
I don't know.
Yeah. Next to the coffee shop, Paradise Fitness, is that area.
Okay.
Coffee's no longer.
Okay, so.
I'm sorry, when you're done.
Go ahead.
Just three things. Confirm tomorrow is at 9:30.
9:30 a.m.
What time will we end?
We're looking at 4:30 or
okay.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll start looking. Well, we'll see how far we get at that point. But that's the time we usually end. We go all the way to
Right. And then, I'm not asking for a resolution, I just want to make sure it's on the radar. One, we filed an objection to the submission of Mr. Hall's declaration in lieu of testifying, that we will be able to cross-examine him. He's from Fannie Howie.
Yeah, it's one of the...
So, there was a statement or a declaration submitted by him, and we filed an objection to that. We can't cross-examine.
Okay.
And then the second issue is the request for determination of non-responsiveness that's filed by Ms. Carol just came off in my office. Get that down Thursday last week. So just want to make sure it's on the radar.
All right. No, it is.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So tomorrow we will. Or just in the event we're not done on Wednesday. Are the parties available for Thursday?
Yes. I'm
yes.
Available all week.
Mr. Keeler?
Here in my calendar.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Aggie? We're looking at 9 a.m., starting at 9 a.m. on Thursday.
On Thursday?
Yes.
Because that's usually a short day to end by 3:30.
Yep.
3:30 on Thursday. Yes, I think it should be.
Because we're already on the hook for 9 a.m. on Friday.
Yes.
Do you think
because
Mr.
we want to finish this this week?
I think it may be done by tomorrow.
Your case in chief.
Mm-hmm.
Your
yeah.
Case in your case.
Because
yeah.
I mean, I'm almost done with Ms. Gale. And
well, you won't be done until Friday morning because we still
with
have
the exception
to
of Mr. Easter.
Okay. And so if we're done tomorrow, then we wouldn't have to go. But anyway, start clearing your schedules or at least taking a look at your schedules for Thursday morning, just in case.
It's open.
All right, just in case.
And definitely for Friday.
Okay, and Friday,
if we can finish, right after him and then go to
and
closing.
And also start to...
If we finish Mr. Easter on Friday and then go to closing immediately afterwards.
Yeah. So
okay.
Plan for your closings for Friday.
All right.
Tentatively this week, okay? So let's go off the record, and we will see you all tomorrow morning.
Thank you.
We're off the record at 3:42 p.m.